All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, I wanted to, you know, we keep getting caught up in this, that socialism. I believe in capitalism. I don't believe in socialism. That's communism. That's communism. We don't hear as much anymore about communism, but we do hear a lot about socialism. And I don't think the American people, many of the American people, a large percentage, even understand when they hear and they talk about the socialism aspect of it. And so this article is talking about the differences between how American and Chinese governments regulate capitalism. Regulating capitalism, is that?
Well, first of all, I mean, Adam Smith thought that there needed to be regulation of capitalism. You need to regulate the marketplace to make sure that the market is a fair market that has competition in it, that will operate so that the businesses don't take control.
So who regulates that? Government?
Well, marketplaces kind of regulate themselves as long as there are enough competitors. But then it's the antitrust laws. That's what antitrust law is about, is regulating marketplaces.
Well, and then, governments write that, though.
Sure, and then that's right. It's government regulation. You know, first of all, there's lots of things that are nominally socialism. Sewers. You know, in fact, Milwaukee used to be called a city of sewer socialists because we were one of the first cities to take public money and build sewers and build out the water and sewer infrastructure. And that was viewed as socialism. No one views today it's socialism if sewers and water facilities are owned by the government. People believe that's what governments do. Bridges, you know, until cars were invented, there were a lot of toll roads and things. Roads could be private or they could be public, but no one today believes that the construction of highways is a reflection of socialism. Military is a common good that's paid for by the government. It's a socialized form of defense so that you and I don't have to have a neighborhood militia. So we have a government army. And that's a form of socialism. So there's lots of things we simply accept. And then the question is, how far do we reach in the terms of the definition of what's a public good? Medicine, you know, the access by each of our citizens to medical care, that in many places is viewed as a government duty to provide medical care to the citizenry. And is that viewed as socialism in the cities? Well, we, you know, the private medical industry here call that socialized medicine, but many places undoubtedly wouldn't tie that to some ideological theory of government. It's just that people need medicine. We need medical care. We've got to give it to them. So education. Education was, you know, the sewer socialists in the around 1900, the American public decided that everyone in America ought to be entitled to education. So we have public schools. Is that socialism? Well, it is as much as sewers. It is as much as bridges. It is as much as the rest of it. So I think it's just a question of where we draw the line, but the marketplace isn't suggested even by the Adam Smith basic economists that the marketplace will provide us with everything we need or want, or nor should it, nor would it. And so we need to evaluate how best to support a vibrant marketplace. And my assertion is that some of these things that other countries have set up, like education and healthcare and childcare, are not socialism. It's the provision by government of the basic needs and wants of citizens so that a marketplace that is free and open can exist. Now, what's happening in China and the United States, to me, is an interesting morph between a country, China, that started communist with all state-owned things, and the United States, which has always felt like it was the basis for true private ownership of most everything, and they're beginning to morph together in particularly the way we try to deal with large capitalism and the startup of new industries. The Chinese government has morphed away from basic communism to being a place where most businesses, particularly large businesses, are invested in by the government. The government's acting more or less like a private equity fund. And these businesses are left pretty much to their own devices by the Chinese government to succeed or not succeed. And so they do have access to investment capital on a basis that's different than the investment capital of the United States, although lots of companies in China are now being invested in directly by American investors. Alibaba, all kinds of very big Chinese businesses are bought and sold by American investors who have a private interest and ownership in them. And the government has as well provided, the Chinese government has provided capital to them so that they can start up and or thrive. And what's happening in the United States? Well, we've long had tax subsidies to various businesses and industries. We're now developing things like a $55 billion fund to support silicon chip manufacturing in the country. What's that? That's a subsidy. So the United States government has realized that in order to compete effectively against a very effective economic process like what is ongoing in China, we have to create something more hybridized than what we've had in terms of the way our free market economy is operated.
But the difference, and correct me if I'm wrong, the difference between what you just said with China and our country is that China's private equity is being used to help not only develop the businesses, but also to benefit the citizens.
Well,
in America, it's there to benefit the business, but what about the beneficiary? Benefiting the citizens.
Well, we've had this theory, which maybe got verbalized by Reagan, that when we benefit
trickle down,
and the president of General Motors who recited during the Eisenhower administration that what's good for General Motors
is good for America.
For America. We have that view that what's good for and there's some truth to that, but the Chinese have more strings attached to their investment that relates to things that might relate directly to the number of people to be employed and other things that would have an effect on the Chinese local economies. And they also have an impact on the standards that are employed by the companies that they invest in. But really, one of the successes in the Chinese economy has been the capacity of the Chinese Communist government to use self-restraint and to allow these companies to operate quite independently from them to become quite successful.
So do you think it's China is looking at it from that perspective because they had so many people they had to lift up in this development of its country as opposed to our country, which, didn't have to bring people from the lowest ebb?
Sure. China was much closer to third world, and we were clearly first world and have been for a long time. So they had a different perspective on things. A communist country, the theology of, the ideology of communism is supposed to be premised on all the people, right? And sharing equally.
Right.
So, there probably was a different, and the Confucian society there is different than ours, so their cultural values are different than ours in many respects. And so, that's one of the problems with us trying to export our thinking entirely to a culture that is so different than ours with a different value set than ours. But China's just been, it's been, and this is not me saying that China's a better place than America, but China has been very, very successful, and its hybridized version of capitalism suggests that our version of capitalism is maybe not optimal, and that there needs to be rethought somewhat. And clearly, that is happening. Deciding that we should inject $55 billion into the silicon industry from the government is a big change in thinking.
Sandy, we this competition that is never going away between our nation and China. And it's in my conversations with people, again, I've repeated this, I'm going to repeat it again. Earl, how many times are you and Sandy going to keep talking about China? And I keep saying to people, you don't have to, you can ignore China all you want to. I go and look and find things that I think are important to discuss. And I can't help it. Everything seems to be pointing, as if and the guy says, well, if you love China so much, why don't you go and live there? Yeah. I said, it's not a matter of us loving China.
Yeah.
We're trying to get people to understand in this country that China is not what we used to see on the old movies of the 40s and the in the 30s with some guy, you know.
Charlie Chan.
Yeah.
Well, you know, China is very important to us. In fact, if you read the Wall Street Journal and the financial news lately, they're very preoccupied with whether China is going into recession, because China is so important in the world economy that a recession, it used to be if, you know, when the United States sneezes, the rest of the world gets a cold. When China sneezes, the rest of the world gets a cold. And so, you know, people are very worried about what's happening to the Chinese economy, this lockdown in Shanghai and the problems they're having with COVID and the way they're dealing with COVID is worrisome to the rest of the world, because what it's going to do to both the supply chain but also the demand chain. If the demand in China drops off because of a recession in China, the rest of the world gets a cold.
Who do we have on the line, Sam?
Andy from Beaver Dam.
Hey, Andy, how you doing, man? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Hi, Sandy, how does the stealing of our technology and trade secrets by the Chinese, how does that blend into this whole
hatred.
Way the Chinese...
Yeah.
Well, you know, there undoubtedly has been commercial espionage by the Chinese, just like there is commercial espionage within the United States, and there is with other countries. But a lot of what's happened with China is the result of some things that are totally legal, not illegal. Number one, China has not signed the International Patent Treaty, so they aren't subject to the restrictions of our patents. They're free to make things that are patented in the United States and sell them within China. They can't sell them internationally, but they're free to use that technology and sell it in China because they're not subject to the restrictions of patents, number one. Number two, many of the companies in the United States that went over to China and built factories knowingly gave up access to their technology to China. It was a condition of doing business there. Now, people can say, well, that was an unreasonable condition of doing business, and we were having our gun held to our head, but no.
We didn't have to go.
We didn't have to go, and the fact was that China was such an enchanting place for these companies to locate, to access the cheap labor, and most of these companies and probably the American enterprise generally underestimated the extent to which China could take advantage of the technology so completely and so effectively. So, I think we point at it and say, well, they cheated and got it so quickly, but actually most of what they got can be attributed to legal conduct that in which we gave it to them, where they had access to it by right.
We've got to go to a break. Thank you, Andy. 844-967-2789. We'll be back.
Superstition!